This is Marketplace Weekend. I'm Lizzie O'Leary.
We are going to start this week with the World Cup. It began on Thursday, and it's arguably the biggest sporting event in the world. It's also a multi-billion dollar business, with TV distribution deals, sponsorships, and economic development. Oh, and corruption. Lots of corruption. The story of FIFA, the world soccer organization, is also a story of bribery, international intrigue, the former spy who compiled a dossier on President Trump, and a guy who walked around with a parrot on his shoulder. All of this is real, and it's part of the new book Red Card, which focuses on the 2015 case in which U.S. prosecutors went after FIFA and indicted 14 people. Ken Bensinger wrote the book, and he joins me. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Lizzie.
I want to start with a story that sounds kind of benign, but it's important. So we're going to go back to 2010, and there's this guy, Chuck Blazer, who is a very colorful figure in U.S. soccer. He decides to deposit a check in his Merrill Lynch account here in New York City. It sounds like such a super normal thing to do. What is happening? Why is it so important?
Chuck Blazer was the highest-ranking American soccer official probably ever in world soccer. He was a soccer dad from suburban New York, from Westchester County, who climbed to the very highest heights of world soccer, was one of the 24 most powerful men on FIFA's executive committee. And little known to 99.9% of the soccer world, he was also incredibly corrupt. That check that he deposited was, in fact, a piece of bribe money he had received in exchange for his vote to give South Africa the 2010 World Cup. He'd done that years earlier, but the money had been coming to him in little drips and drabs over the years. And that check he deposited into his account in Merrill Lynch rather than sending it to his secret offshore bank accounts in the Caribbean. And as a result, an IRS agent saw the account number, saw that it was an American bank, and used that to start the first subpoena against Chuck Blazer, a secret subpoena. And that subpoena opened up the case against Chuck Blazer and allowed the IRS to grab him and secretly corner and flip him in a building next to the Trump Tower in late 2011.
One of the reasons I have you on the show is not just because this book is so fascinating, but because so much of the prosecution against FIFA and the people involved comes down to things like taxes and bank accounts and following the money. How did U.S. IRS agents and FBI agents put this prosecution together?
Yeah, that's exactly it. This is really a money laundering case more than anything else.
And it just happens to be in soccer?
It happens to be about soccer. I mean, you know, if you read this book looking for reports about matches and who scored what goal, you're going to be disappointed. But if you want to find out the fascinating world of how you can trace money all around the globe through correspondent banks and transfers through the clearinghouse interbanking transfer system, then, well, you're set. And the most dramatic example of that was a Brazilian who was convicted, and they showed how money started here, went to this company, they showed the contract, then they showed the money go to this place, they showed another contract, and you follow it around until finally the last step, it ends up in a Morgan Stanley account in the U.S. Then they show the debit card activity of that Morgan Stanley account, and they show how this guy, who was the account holder, went and bought $50,000 worth of stuff at Hermes with money from that account within weeks of receiving it.
One of the things I think that struck me as an American who pays sort of glancing attention to soccer, to football, unlike the rest of the world, was how brazen some of the schemes involved are. For example, just the outright bribery. Can you explain a little bit about how that works? How, say, the World Cup ends up in Russia or in South Africa and the vote buying that happened.
Yeah, so that's one, probably the most high-profile kind of bribery is the vote buying, right? You have different bodies within FIFA that are in charge of making these huge decisions for the sport, like where the World Cup is held. And until recently, that was determined by a small group of people. And so those countries that wanted to win had a very limited target list. They knew exactly who they needed to get the money to. And so then it was just a matter of finding them and meeting them in a quiet place when no one was around and offering them whatever they wanted, money, gifts, women, artworks, whatever it was to get them to commit their vote, right? And these are the accusations levied against bidders in almost every round for the last 10, 15, or 20 years. So that's one kind of bribery. But there's a whole other set of bribery that ends up becoming the nucleus of the U.S. case and one that's much less understood. And that kind of bribery is what we can think of as the commercial aspect of soccer or football, as the rest of the world calls it, and that is where the real money is, which is television and sponsorship, right? This is the golden goose. Soccer is something that everyone in the world wants to watch. There's about twice as many people who are followers of the faith of football than the faith of Catholicism, right?
Which you lay out as sort of using Brazil as the description, yeah.
Right. Brazil is the largest Catholic country in the world, but they like football more. And so the television rights are very valuable, right? And soccer administrators, the officials who run the different soccer associations in every country and every continent, figured out that that some people would be willing to pay them under the table bribes in exchange for very sweet deals for those rights. And that's the great sort of soccer corruption that no one really understood until this case broke it open. It was just the day after day bribe payments that sort of undermined the whole sport and were low profile perhaps than where the World Cup is, but didn't happen every 6 years or every 4 years. They happen every day.
I'm talking with Ken Bensinger, the author of Red Card.
Hi there.
I think if the majority of Americans know anything about FIFA, they know that it's corrupt.
Hmm.
Why did it take these sort of slogs through everyday transactions and an IRS agent, an FBI agent, well-versed in, you know, prosecuting the mafia to actually make a prosecution stick?
It's hard for Americans, hard for us to understand the political influence that soccer has in the rest of the world. In other countries, it's sort of as if you could mash all the U.S. sports leagues into one: hockey, baseball, basketball, and football. If you could smash them all into one thing, it starts to give you an idea of how powerful it is. And in these countries, they're frankly afraid. You really sense that politicians are afraid, law enforcement is afraid to dip their toe in this. And the history of criminal investigations of what has been sort of the open secret of corruption at FIFA is incredibly limited. No one was willing to do it because the political costs were too high. We're in the U.S. The truth is soccer is maybe number four or number five sport. And so that, in a sense, gave the political cover for an American investigation to open. You know, they weren't going to get hauled before a Senate committee demanding to know why they were messing with the golden, you know, this golden prize.
That is also the knock against this case, that maybe the Americans were somehow jealous or they felt out of the loop. Mm-hmm. You write about this a little bit, the sort of animosity toward American law enforcement. It was like, oh, well, you guys don't really get soccer anyway.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not the truth. The FBI agents who opened the case knew almost nothing about soccer, didn't care about it, didn't hate it either, really had no opinion about it. And in that sense, it's a bit prosaic and a little bit mundane. The case opened because they had a good tip and they were interested in it. And that's all. They just ran with that.
So the U.S., hey, 2026 World Cup, is that a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, as a soccer fan, to some degree, I'm happy because I'll get to take my kids, you know. It's a lot easier than probably hauling them across the world to Morocco to go to an event. So on a very parochial level, that's good. But I think it's also good because I think for the sport, if Morocco had won, it would look very suspicious. It would look like another black mark on the sport. And instead bring it to the U.S. and to Canada and to Mexico is a sign that they're headed maybe in the right direction. The U.S. was presenting a cleaner kind of bid and we're trying to show sort of a transparent way to do things. So I think that's, in the long run, probably good for the sport. And I think for FIFA, which has serious financial problems now in the wake of this criminal investigation, all these sponsors pulled out, and then all these legal bills from American law firms piled up. They're hugely in the red, which is something that never used to happen. They need an economic winner. And there's almost no question that a tournament in North America is going to make a ton of money.
Is FIFA less corrupt now?
Maybe marginally. You know, I think it's important to think of the way that the prosecutors did about this case, which is this is like a large enterprise with a deep-rooted criminal culture, essentially. Doesn't mean that soccer is intrinsically corrupt, but it has sort of been infected, is the way to think of it, with a kind of corruption or a kind of cancer of corruption. And this, you could think of this as like that first round of chemotherapy, right? And you sort of knock out the cancer, but it doesn't mean that the cancer cells aren't circulating in the blood, and that the culture of people believing that soccer is some sort of you know, land grab where they can make as much money as they want. Those, that whole culture has to change, and you can't do it overnight, because when you knocked off the head, the bladders of the world, the next people to come up kind of came up in the same culture. To change that's going to take a long time. And I think a lot of people said, well, this investigation happened. Why isn't soccer clean yet? And I think the answer is, you know, no one in the case ever expected it to be clean overnight. They expected it sort of, another metaphor might be a sick tree. You cut off the rotten part and hope that it regrows and gets strong again.
Ken Bensinger is an investigative reporter for BuzzFeed and the author of Red Card, How the U.S. Blew the Whistle on the World's Biggest Sports Scandal. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lizzie, for having me.